Steal This Beer, a candid weekly discussion about beer, over beer, by a couple of guys that think about beer way too much.
All right, hey y'all, it's 5 o'clock on Monday, and we are Stealing Beer. I'm Augie Carton. Playing the role of John Hall today is Aaron Goldfarb. You're supposed to tell people it's not 5 o'clock on Monday right now, because that's Hall's job.
Okay. What time is it, Aaron?
It is like 10:40 on a Saturday.
And it is 10:40 on a Saturday because we are...
Saturday morning, by the way.
Yeah, early Saturday morning. I'm sure you hear it in my voice. It is that time of day because we are actually coming to you from Captain Lawrence's Soured in September Beer Fest at Scott Vaccaro's awesome brewery, and he is our guest. So say hello as the accomplice.
Hello, everybody. Happy to be here.
Thanks for joining us, man. Justin is Justining. Hi, Justin.
Hey, what's up?
How are you?
Good.
Let's just jump right into it. So we recently had the Newberg guys on, and we had the Peekskill guys on.
Cool.
And now we have you on, so we're clearly doing a suite of Hudson Valley episodes.
Sure.
And I, on the last show, I gave you a lot of credit, and I'm wondering if you're comfortable taking the credit. But I was talking about how, okay, so there's where there were 1,000 breweries 5 years ago, there's 4. So there really are, without getting all silly and sanctimonious about terroir, there's now a real regionality to style. There is what's going on in Vermont in the Northeast. There's what's going on, say, Delaware up to me. There's the Florida flavors. There's the Asheville flavors. Mm-hmm. There's the Chicago flavors. And what occurred to me while talking to the Newberg and Peekskill guys is there's definitely something about the Hudson River Valley. And I kind of patly gave you credit for it, since pretty much everybody that brews up here has spent time with you, right? You've been doing this since 06, so 10 years now?
It's been 10 years, yeah.
Right, but so who else? So Evan from Plan B's worked for and with you.
Yep. Matt Levy, who was at Peekskill and now I believe is moving down the road to Threes.
Right. But
there's been a few other guys.
That's what I'm saying. All these guys have spent time with you, so I was giving you credit for it. And what I called the style was, and it sounds pejorative, and I don't mean it to be because it's the kind of beers I love, but where the whole world seems to be working on the most impressive beer, the Hudson Valley seems to be working on the most drinkable beer. Right, guys are making
it's
drinkable
important to be able
beers.
To drink the beer. Yeah,
I'm with you.
You know, we our model is you know, not every beer follows this, but we like to be beers that people can have a few of.
That's what I'm saying. And so you got Newberg's Cream, you've got all of your beers, you've got Kolsch,
yeah,
you've got and everybody seems to, and I like that. So I was I was wondering how much of that you think is you and where. So tell us where you come from to become the guy leading these guys.
Well,
how did
I
you get to you?
I'm just another cog, you know, in the big machine of beer. I mean, I followed those before me. But I mean, you know, my quick story is I started homebrewing at 17. I ended up going to UC Davis and getting a 4-year degree in fermentation science.
Awesome.
I brewed at Sierra Nevada for a few years right out of school in good old Chico, California, and then made my way back east after 6 years out west. And, you know, at 26, no mortgage, no wife, no responsibilities, great time to open up a brewery because if it didn't work, I didn't really care. And, you know, I knew I could make good beer. Yeah. I had no idea if I could sell it. And that's what the last 10 years has been all about, trying to figure out how to, you know, get that good beer to market and continue to innovate and have fun.
Right on. I appreciate all that. Speaking of Sierra, I just got back from a North Carolina trip, and I went to their new place. Have you been yet?
I have not. I've seen pictures. It looks pretty gorgeous.
It's unbelievable.
Insane.
Yeah. Here's what it is, right? So I'm sure a million people have a million metaphors for it. I heard it called Malt Disney World, which made me very happy. It's a guy who finally got to do everything he wanted, right? It's like the guy who's done construction and built 50 homes for other people finally builds his own house with enough money to build his own house. Like, everything is where it should be.
Yeah, they spare no expense. They pay attention to detail and they do things right. And
it was neat. Like I said, it was when you give me a tour of your brewery, I was at Chief's last night.
Sure.
When Chief gives me a tour of his brewery, there's things you explain that you had to work around. Yeah. Like, here's why we do this way.
Right.
There's none of that there.
No.
Everything is right where it makes sense to you.
They usually take a straight line to where they need to get
to. So what was it like brewing for those guys? That's got to be cool. And tell me about that.
That was kind of like grad school, I kind of think of it. You know, I got done with my fermentation science degree, and I hadn't worked professionally at a brewery yet. And so that was, you know, my first real jump into it. And, you know, I mean, that they taught me attention to detail and, you know, what you need to do to make, it's all about quality, right? I mean, that's the one thing at Sierra Nevada, as long as they've been at it, they've, from day one, it's been quality, quality, quality. And getting to see it firsthand is definitely an interesting experience.
And you brought that home. Now, you opened, Captain Lawrence started somewhere else, right? This is the second home of Captain Lawrence?
Yeah, so we were about 4.5 miles down the road in Pleasantville.
Okay.
And, you know, talk like you were saying earlier about, you know, explaining why you do things a certain way. I mean, that was a building that was definitely not built for what we were using it for. And by the time we left, it was crumbling around us because we'd hit the walls with the forklift so many times. So, it was a small, tight little space. And, you know, honestly, I remember first walking into it before we even opened, and it looked like an airplane hangar. I was like, wow, this place is huge. I'll never fill it. You know, 4 years later, we couldn't move. Same thing with this place. I looked at this place, and you think I would have learned my lesson. I walked into this place. I was like, it's enormous. I'm never going to fill it. And now we're 5 years in, and I'm begging the landlord for more space.
And so, you went through a wall last year and did kind of a sour area. For those of you that haven't been up to Captain Lawrence,
2 years ago.
Is it 2 years ago? Because it's awesome. But there's an entire area in here that I think every brewer I know like dreams of having. Like, it's got its own bottling line for sours. It's got proper wood. It's pretty awesome.
We were excited to get that space. We had always planned on getting that space. We knew we'd get it, and we planned ahead, and we filled it up with wood pretty quick.
Right on. Yeah, it's come visit and see it. You'll know what I mean. I'm not going to do any proper justice describing it, but if you're a geek for properly done sours, it's a room you can do that in. All right, so we should talk about the Black Glass. Thieves at home, you know what we do. If you're new to the show, welcome. This is supposed to be a candid discussion of beer. To facilitate that, Scott brings a beer on. I don't know what it is. Justin, you poured it, so you know what it is.
Yep, I know what it is.
Aaron has no idea what it is. It's in a black glass. We can't even see it. So, you know, we're just trying to talk about what beer is and not what it should be or wants to be. And this is a big-ass IPA, right? Pretty straightforward. The hops are all right on the nose. There's a bit of an alcohol thing going on where I've got some kind of solvent landing the hops. Not bad, just neatly, like there's so much there.
It's also a little warm, I'll say.
Yeah, but I like that. Yeah. I'd prefer it be
really
a little warm if you're trying to chase it. What? You don't like it?
I never bitch about beer temperature. I usually drink my beer almost room temperature, but the warmness is kind of annoying me.
Is it?
This one. Yeah.
That's awesome. You're so fussy since you had a heart attack.
I got a baboon heart.
That's right. To be fair, I thought you had a baboon heart before too.
It did ride shotgun with me on the way here. So
no, I think it doesn't bother me at all. Like I so.
But we're not drinking it at ideal temperature.
No, we're definitely not drinking it at ideal temperature. Yeah. But
I like it. I'm saying.
Yeah.
But.
No, but to be fair, coldness dulls angles, and I usually don't. You know what I mean? Even if we start cold, I usually wait till it warms up to here. I get that, but if you want to see everything it's going to do, it needs to be somewhere much warmer than
I was made fun of on the show recently for warming a beer in my hand.
Was it me?
No, it was Hall. It was John Hall.
Oh, John Hall. He's so picky. Speaking of which, John Hall is in Alaska, so when we do get John Hall back, we're going to hear all about the world of craft in Alaska.
Oh, yeah.
But for now, let's talk about Hudson Valley. What do you think about the beer, though, besides the warmth pissing you off, baboon heart?
No, I really like it. Your tasting notes are spot on. It's tropical, pineapple-y. It has more of a malty base than most of the orange juices being released nowadays, which I like. I'm tired of the lack of malt in the beers coming out of every Saturday in Brooklyn. But
hey. Those are our heroes.
I drink all the
time. It's not just Brooklyn.
Yeah. So actually, let's talk about that, Scott, because you've been around long enough, and you managed to, what'll I say, be a gentleman about that. Like, you're definitely not chasing trends. Your IPAs are much more classic than most.
Sure.
And because of that, they don't need to be drunk the day they come out. Like I said, I just came back from North Carolina, and my take on North Carolina was that there's a couple people down there making their own beers mm-hmm. they want to make. But one of the places I went to, and I won't be mean to it because there's no reason to be mean to it, but a local, not a local brewer, a local dude was like, you got to come here. It's the best beer in the area. And I went, and what they were making was copies of mm-hmm. Trillium Treehouse and those guys. And the problem with your inspiration being copying is the beers weren't as good. Everybody down there
right.
that was in the room thought they were amazing because they did all the things they should do, but they lacked a bit of finesse. And mm-hmm. I know in that kind of sloppy, slutty, ballsy style, there's not much finesse to be appreciated. But when you get it by somebody who it's not their thing, all of a sudden you realize the difference. Mm-hmm. And that was funny to me. When obviously you make the beers you want, obviously you got a great sour program, obviously you, Kolsch is the beer that introduced me to you, and that's not a beer anybody's going to call a, you
no,
know,
that's
a,
not a high
top
score
style.
On the, yeah. Great beer.
That's
ad.
Never going to come in.
Geeks
yeah, you're up. Nailing it when that thing's got an 82, right?
It's that's kind of swinging yeah, back exactly. that way, though.
But what?
It's kind of swinging back that way, and Kolsch's and Pilsner's are getting not as hyped as IPAs, but they're being.
There's
more
still
and
not
more
lines on Saturdays.
That's
for Kolsch's.
Yeah.
I just made a smoked porter, which I think is the coolest beer I've ever made. Yeah. It did. I nailed exactly everything I wanted to do with it. It literally was exactly what I wanted. And people buy it by the four pack instead of by the case. Yeah. I get it, but it's just a weird thing to realize when you think you've done your best work, right. And they're like, "But this IPA," I'm like, "Yeah, but there's
doesn't trade.
There's 10 million of those. This is the only one of these. It's weird. What's that realization for you? When are you like, but wait, this is,
it's a tough one. I feel like, you know, I've been pretty behind the trend on social media, and it's funny. Like, I got an Instagram account and recently, and all of a sudden, I was like, "What the fuck happened in the world? IPAs all of a sudden look like wheat beers." Like, I missed that one.
They look so beyond wheat beers. They look so beyond wheat beers.
They look like Italian.
I literally like was like, "Wow, I guess I should have been on social media a few years ago." Like, yeah, what the fuck happened?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, for me, it comes down to flavor, right? If the beer's crystal clear and tastes right, smells right, and is good, then I'm all for it. If it looks like a milkshake and tastes good, then I'm all for that too. I think it's just, what we do as brewers is try to bring new and exciting flavors to people, and, you know, without innovation, we all go away. And who's to say that someone's innovation is not, the right type? It really comes down to what people want. If people are willing to pay money for it, I figure it's good.
I think you're right. That's probably the biggest truth there is, right? And people do love paying money for those beers. And I love drinking them. I'm not mad at them. It's funny that to see a giant difference from the ones we get up here,
sure.
Because I think it's from up here close enough to us that we get them. But you go far away and you see people copying. Like,
it almost seems easy to make them until you have one that's bad.
I mean,
it's kind of cool that there's a trend coming out of the Northeast. I mean, like, who in a million years would have thought?
Second that. Yeah.
No doubt. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
We used to be mocked for.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the brewers in California probably will look at that. And, you know, I saw a funny post the other day somebody forwarded me that was a picture of a glass full of basically yeast that said, you know, New England IPAs or the shit that's left at the end of the tank after you make a respectable beer. You know, I mean,
the problem with that is how much fun they are to drink.
Yeah.
I don't think they should be taken more seriously than how fun they are to drink, but boy, they are fun to drink when they're well made. Anyway, back to it. what about this beer? So now the next part of the tasting is the sentence. Where are you drinking it, who are you drinking it with, and why? And I feel like this is actually, so we're about to do a day of sour drinking.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is going to be what this feels like to me is the beer I'm going to want to come back to at the end of sours.
Absolutely.
When I look at you, Scott, at 5 p.m. today after you and I have had five of each other's beers, five of Evan's beers, everybody's tastes and your mouth is just destroyed by the joy of lambic. So I'm going to be like, I need a straightforward, not try to do much, but be juicy, hoppy IPA. I feel like this is the beer you go to wash that out and get back to beer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can see that.
What about you, Aaron? Where are you drinking this and who are you drinking it with?
Yeah, well, I got my baboon heart now, so I can't have two.
You can't
have
two.
So I'll be curious to see what the ABV is. It doesn't feel that high, maybe 6 or 7.
I don't think it's 10.
Yeah, I don't feel like I'd crush a ton of these. Just relax into the day, maybe slowly drink one.
Right on. What is it?
It is actually a session IPA from Trophy Brewing in I think Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yeah,
North Carolina.
I think I was just there. I was in Trophy. What do they call it?
Trophy Wife.
Okay, I didn't have this.
Good
so
name.
They had
hopefully
this
that's
their
not
first
the one
canning, actually.
On.
They sent me up some beers and met at the Craft Brewers Conference. We were doing a little trade. Yeah,
right on.
They sent me up a couple. IPA they sent me, Cloudwalker, I think it was called. I drank them all.
And it was super. It was super turgid, right? And I did mean turgid.
It has a lot more body than a session IPA.
It does.
I didn't see it.
4.9, I think it says on it.
It's 4.9. Yeah,
It's not hop water.
Influenced by what you guys were saying, but I think it does taste more like, or it drinks more like a
around
regular
six
IPA.
Or seven. Yeah, I think that's right.
It's really nice.
Which
it's got a good mouthfeel.
Everything that's written on a can.
That's exactly right.
To be fair, nobody's tested it.
I mean, it has a finish. It has.
Yeah, I went to Trophy when I was down there. That was one cool of my spot. Stops. Yeah, it's cool. They got a lot of outdoor space, not unlike you. Mm-hmm. They've got some of that cornhole going on, and I think they had a pool table outside, which was fun. And then inside, it's just a long bar with a bunch of board games to play while you drink.
Cool.
Yeah, it was a good spot. Well, thanks for that. That makes sense.
Pleasure.
Do you think you like it for a session?
I do. I mean, it's got a lot of body for a session. You know, there's definitely more to it than just a thin, watery beer.
Yeah,
so,
I would bet there's a bunch of oats in there, though, right? Something to give it that mouthfeel.
It's got that slick kind of coating feel.
Cool.
It's nice.
All right, so let's talk about what did I have. So last night I came up to Westchester to get ready for your thing. I got in a car to go to Chief's new place, and I got in a car with your, I believe, new IPA. What's it called? Hop something?
Hop Commander?
Hop Commander.
There you go.
How long has that been out?
A couple years.
Okay.
So
it's one of those great things where it's from my buddy's house I was staying at to Chief's Brew is an hour. And we were Ubering because, you know, Chief is going to destroy us.
Sure, why not?
So he's like, you want a beer for the road? I was like, if you got a good beer, I'll drink it. But I was so afraid he was going to open the fridge and pull out a silver bullet. He opened the fridge and there was a six pack of your beer in bottles.
Perfect.
So we just grabbed those and drank them on the ride up there. And again, really nicely put together, fun drinking IPA. Now take me to your grapefruit session. Where'd that come from? How'd you put that together? What was the idea there? Because I was drinking those at some event and I'm usually not a grapefruit and beer guy. Could, because we can do it with hops, I'm like, why? How did you do it to keep it not juice but zest? You know, what was the idea there? How'd that come together?
It is our effortless session IPA. So that, I mean, we didn't make this specifically to be a fruit beer by any means. So it gets dry hopped with Mosaic and Palisade and Bravo. I mean, it's, you know, we treat it just like we would a regular IPA, and then, you know, right before packaging, we kind of just juice it up a little
bit. Just a little. Because it's not much, right? It's just, to me, it felt much more zesty than juicy.
The goal was to make an IPA with an accentuated grapefruit flavor rather than make a grapefruit beer that, you know, like a Shandy or whatever. So, I'm with you 100%. And it's a 4.5% ABV beer, and that is lab tested. So we know it's low ABV. And it is, you know, easy drinking. I mean, the whole grapefruit trend and the fruit flavored IPA trend and, you know, it's an interesting trend. I never was a real big fruit flavor person myself, and you're absolutely right. You can get there with just hops. But, you know, kind of taking a sessionable beer and bringing it to that next level was kind of the goal.
So we do one that we put a little orange zest in, but it's just zest because I'm afraid to get juicy, again, like you're saying. But that's what I like about your grapefruit is, I guess, exactly like we just said. It's just a touch to push the idea.
It took a while to get that. I mean, I'm not going to lie.
Because if you put too much in, then it just tastes like grapefruit, and then why the fuck not just put, you know, what's the salted rim vodka grapefruit juice drink? A salty dog?
Greyhound?
A greyhound? Yes, why not just drink that, right?
But, well, that was the goal. It was make a beer that had some nice grapefruit character
to
it.
So we're walking into a sour fest here, aren't we?
They're talking about the second beer, right there.
Okay, so second beer just landed in front of us, and it smells like a pretty sour. Yeah, we're gonna like that. Let's let that sit for a second. You can drink this one warm, right, Baboon Heart? That's okay.
I drink most styles warm, so it's very rare for me to bitch about warmth of a beer.
That makes sense now that it's been revealed as a 4.5, right? So you know that we actually at Carton, I put on the bottom of the can just kind of a starting level for coldness because, you know, I think you should drink a beer through its whole thing and let it get there. But where you start, like if you start a stout at 38, you're done at 45. And I think you want to start at 45 and go up to like 55, right? So I kind of just put, please start at, and it's a rough guideline. But the only one I start like refrigerator cold 38 degrees is Boat. Because if you're going to drink 50 of them, you want them starting there. And by the time you've had your fifth, they should be warming up because you've slowed down. You know what I mean?
And your insides are a lot warmer.
But so as a 4.5 beer, your critique seems more valid to me.
Yeah, I mean,
does that make sense?
Yeah, at home, the only thing I refrigerate are Pilsners, Session IPAs. Barley wines and stouts go straight from the cellar to my glass. They never hit the fridge.
I dug deep into the to my archive.
Oh,
this is really nice.
There's a lot of wine barrel going on there, right?
Maybe
juicy.
It's actually a pilsner.
It's a pilsner. God damn it! Then I think it's a milk stout. We had somehow John Hall and I have twice with the black glass chased a pilsner all the way out to milk stout. Twice we've been like, it's smoky
crazy
and
what your
roasty.
Eyes
yeah,
tell you.
It's smoky and it's roasty. And what is it? And luckily, I had one where I was like, except for this pilsner thing, I can't figure out. It's a milk stout, and it turned out to be a straightforward little pilsner. So
that's pretty funny.
We always, I always think it's such a ballsy thing for guys to do. Thank you for doing it with me, Aaron, is to just put your dick on the board and be like, go ahead, chop. Let's see if we got it.
Yeah, no one, well, you're right.
People don't think I know anything anyway, so I can only redeem myself.
And what do we got here? We got some kind of little dark berry. We got a wine barrel. I'm almost sure it's going to end up being the Cations again, right? It's got to be, right? It's got
know.
That.
I don't think so? I get like a La Folie.
So I think brewers love, I don't think I'm saying anything profound here, but I think all of us love, you know, what's his name?
Vinny.
Thank you, Vinny. And I've learned that when I put it all together and it tastes to me like it is a proper lambic, but then I get a little bit of
wine.
American red fruit, American red wine on it, it's going to be one of Vinny's beers.
So this would be consecration, I think.
I don't know. If and I'm not trying to guess. That's not my job. The job is to talk about what the beer is, but he's got such a stamp at this point on my brain. This is going to be the brown-labeled Cation and not the yellow-labeled Cation. We've had the yellow-labeled Cation come on 3 times.
You guys are good.
Each time I'm like, I love this beer. And then you're like, it's the beer you love. And I'm like, God damn it. Should have guessed it. It's got to be, right?
It's
so tasty.
It's consecration, yeah.
How did, all right.
Bottled you, you're 2012.
But you're a better brewer than I am. How does he do this so well? Is it just he's got a deep library and he's blending? Why does he do this so much better than most people that try it?
I don't know this for a fact, but I think that Vinny has created a process and a
By the way, consecration 2012.
That is awesome. Just, you know, he figured it out and he follows it every time, and because of that, he creates, you know, successful sours every time. There's no what happened this time. It's the beer. I mean, you just picked it out. It's 4 years old.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's got that thing, right? It's got that. It's just so pretty. Juicy. And it's what's the fruit they put in this one?
Black currants, I think.
I was guessing blackberry, but yeah, currants.
And
make
I don't
lot
know this.
Sense.
I'm pretty sure.
Thanks
I
for
read
this, man.
This
what a great beer.
That he uses dried fruit for a lot of them because it's easier to get in the barrel and get out. I don't know that for a fact. I thought I heard him say that at a.
Now tell us about your sour program, because you also do a great job with sours. I very much appreciate that about you, and I steal a lot of ideas from you. The thieves at home don't know this, but we actually took our advice on how to distribute beer from you 5 years ago. Like, we've come to Scott with a lot of questions over the years, and he's talked me through a lot of confusing things.
I try.
So there's things I'm taking for granted, but one of our things at Carton is we've got a series of barrels we've been putting down in the basement for our whole 5 years that we've never pulled a beer out of because I just want them there to blend, and that's a philosophy I picked up from you and a couple other brewers. How are you doing now that you can really commit to it, now that you've carved out a space for yourself? How deep is it going? What's your aspiration with that? Because I forget what last time I was up here as just a drunk and stopping in, you were releasing a sour that I drank a ton of and loved. Tell us about that. What's the fun of that part of Captain Lawrence right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fun part. It's a slightly stressful part. I mean, they're not always the easiest beers to finish. You know, I mean, sometimes you could bottle them and it takes a little longer to carbonate than you're hoping for. But, you know, since getting the dedicated space, you know, we've tried to be a lot more focused on, you know, the final product from start to finish rather than... In the past, we did a lot of let's just keep filling barrels with as much random stuff as we can and put them aside and blend. And that worked, and I definitely enjoy it. We still do that a little bit. But since having a dedicated space, we've tried to focus on, all right, this is where we're starting. This is when we want it to end. That's what we're hoping anyway. Here's what we want to do in between. And, you know, if we do these things right, we should get to the end point that we know.
And you've got those big, beautiful fooders now. So what are you doing? Yes. Like brewing into them, making a base, and then touching it with the stuff out of the catalog?
So, you know, some of our beers, like all the Hudson Valley Harvest beers, were the same base golden sour. Okay. And then they each got the individual fruits. You know, the Cuvée has its own base. The Rosso has its own base. And so we'll fill the fooders with that. The way I like to do it is fill the fooder, let it get funky with Brett and Lacto, maybe 6 months or so. So it's not over
no
the top.
PDO
no
or
PDO.
Just
I never add that actually on purpose. Okay. Then add fruit, let it go for another 6 months to a year, and then package. So then we like to let it kind of.
And is that all in the fooder, or are you moving it out of fooder? Okay.
Well, I mean, we in the past we've used 55-gallon oak barrels. Yeah. I'll tell you, it's a lot easier in a fooder when you have a 4-foot opening, stainless steel that you can just lift up and dump it in.
You can actually break the bottom.
A lot easier.
But I was just out part of the North Carolina trip as I went to Jester King's Funkatorium. Nope. Am I saying that right?
Wicked Weeds
Funkatorium. Yeah. And they have a fruiting thing they claim to have patented, but basically it's just a bright with a giant port on the bottom. Mm-hmm. So they just put all their fruit in, put their beer in, and when they want to clean it, they just open the port and it dumps right out of the bottom.
That's smart.
Pretty genius.
So they'll fruit right before packaging on some of them?
Yeah, and pump right off to package. And then when you want to clean it, there's literally like a port volleyball
a big
circumference.
6-incher?
That they just open. It just goes bloop. I like it a lot. I can't stop drinking this. So this has kind of evolved into the neatest, like, right in the middle of all the fruit and all the sour and that little kind of wood bite. There's this Nestle Quick milk chocolate thing from what's got to be the malts, right? Like, oh, man, he makes good beers. Yeah, thank you, Scott.
Great. Yeah, Vinny is he's a...
He's one of our better ones. Yeah, he's one of our better guys.
Yeah, I mean, growing up as a home brewer, I mean, it was reading, you know, Michael Jackson's books, you know, reading about all the Belgian lambics and all that stuff. And I was in California a lot of that time. And, you know, between Vinny and Peter Bouquet at New Belgium, those were the kind of American versions that I would seek out and get my hands on at the time. And, I mean, these were, you know, big inspirations.
Uh-huh. So thanks for bringing it.
Were they teaching wild yeast when you were in brewing school?
No.
No, well, now, actually, that you're touching on something I want to ask about. So I've got a big wine history. I love wine. I've thought about it. So Davis's fermenting program has been something I've always been aware of. And it's really there's nothing else like it except for maybe one school in Germany, right? It's a full 4-year degree,
bachelor's
almost
science,
entirely done on fermentation. Now, do you learn all of the fermentations? Like, how do you make that a beer education versus a wine education?
So when I was there, you know, there were a lot of options, a lot of offshoots. You could take distillation. You could take a lot of winemaking classes. And I did. I took a lot of winemaking. The brewing side of it, honestly, was only a couple classes when I was there. And so, you know, you really had to, you know, at least me personally, I did a lot of reading and did a lot of stuff on my own and was continuing to homebrew the whole time. You know, and when I was there, the facilities were built in the 40s or 50s. Shit was falling apart.
Okay.
2 years after I left, Robert Mondavi gave them $27 million and AB gave them $5 million. And now they have the most beautiful setup in, like, you know, the world for, you know, state-of-the-art, you know, ridiculous system. So I had to focus a lot on doing stuff myself. I worked at a homebrew shop when I was out there the whole time as well. Fermentation Frenzy is no longer around. And so...
How far is Davis from Chico?
It's a good question. Do I remember that? An hour and a half, 2 hours?
Right.
Hour and a half?
Yeah, the thing about California is it's so long north to south that you feel like you should be close. And
I can tell you Chico to the base of Squaw Valley is 2 hours and 10 minutes because I did that a lot.
That makes sense. All right, so basically you're studying yeast.
Yeah, so you could.
And then you had to push yourself towards beer.
It's a food science degree at the end of the day. So you could learn about anything fermented, sausage, yogurt. You know, you take food safety classes.
Cool.
You take, you know, the first 2 years is all. The first 2 years you're with pre-med students. It's physics, biochem, organic chem.
That's awesome.
I wanted to shoot myself.
That sounds amazing.
calculus, like all that ridiculous shit. I mean, you got to be out of your mind. And then when they go off to learn how to save the world, I go learn how to really save the world.
How to really make it okay that the world's been saved.
Exactly. But it was cool. But the best part about it was, you know, when you go on a field trip to Sierra Nevada, like that's what you do when you're a brewing student. And that's how I ended up with my job. We went on a field trip up there. I asked them if they were hiring, and you know, they said, "Yeah, we're expanding. We need more brewers." So I said, "All right, I'll throw my head in the ring."
That's awesome. Good for you, man. I love that story. I wish I'd done that. I'm a college dropout. I was so bad at school.
But you've made it.
Well, I've made it. I've made it by working the hustle, not by being good at anything.
It's you and Zuckerberg, the famous dropout.
Stop it. If I was Zuckerberg, there'd be a lot more wood at Carton Brewing. That's cool. Yeah, it's such a neat thing to do 4 years and what everybody else tries to claim was that 3 months was enough, right? How many applications do you get from young brewers that did one of those programs?
Every week we get something. I mean, you know, but in all honesty, it's been less and less. I think that there's just so many damn breweries out there.
Yeah,
now
everybody. There's a job for everybody.
I meet brewery owners who have homebrewed for 2 years, and I'm thinking, well, maybe that's why your beer's so terrible.
Yeah, there's definitely some not so good beer out there these days.
It's gratifying to see a guy who actually is
there's not too many 17-year-olds, though, that realize they want to make beer for the rest of their life. So, I mean, you know, and I got to give my parents a lot of credit. There's probably not too many parents that are going to be, oh, yeah, let's send you to California to learn how to make beer. You're not even allowed to drink.
I think that's so wonderful.
You know. So what were you drinking in high school?
Were you allowed to drink in your house? I came from one of those houses where drinking was encouraged.
Yeah,
so.
No, my
maybe
parents
got through high school.
You know, I remember the conversation. I was like, you know, we could either be in the basement where you know we're safe, or we could be out in the woods running from the cops.
Yeah, it's that's 80s, like, right, 80s, 90s.
We don't want to see anything. But we used to do, I remember this, my senior year, we used to do what we'd call exotic beer night, and we'd go to, you know, the one or two places that we could buy beer at, and we'd, you know, whether it would be like
Duval,
Anchor, Old Foghorn, or like, so like, you know, yeah, Duval, like, yeah, ran, you know, these expensive beers that we were like, oh, I can't believe how much money we're spending on a six pack of that. Heineken Dark. Like, I mean, I'm not
that's,
even kidding.
That's big time for a 17-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's deep. I mean, that's deep ocean.
And we'd sit around and we'd be like, you know, we'd talk about them and whatnot. And
that's
then, you
awesome.
Know, we'd get through those.
What a geek you are. I didn't even realize how deep this was. I'm
and then once all those beers were done, it was right to the Stroh's 30 rack.
Yeah, obviously. I got to tell you, so this is like the 10th time on the story, so I'm sorry, thieves. But there was a point where I'd gone out to Kentucky to brew with Against the Grain. Strumke shows up. We're in some dive after a full day of serious drinking. Mm-hmm. And Strumke's making us do a Fernet shot, as he will. So everybody picks a crappy beer from this, you know, collection. There was old whatever. And I had my first Stroh's in, I think, 20 years. They had Firebrood. And I fucking loved it, man. It really is my favorite of those crappy Pilsner beers. I was so happy to have it. It was like being in high school again.
It was those, and we used to buy cases of Schaefer Long Neck for $9.99.
Oh. Nice.
The one to have when you're having more than one.
That's it, right. Man.
Schaefer is my beer, the dry beer. all right. I think we land on everybody's jingles. Read me a letter there, Justin.
You want a letter?
What do the thieves have to say to us this week?
How many letters do you get a week?
Millions. While you find this letter, I'm going to ask the thieves to do me a favor and write us some letters. I got a question for you, because... So it's going well. People are listening. You guys are clearly getting more people to listen. And I'm wondering, because I was having a conversation about it. Somebody asked me which episode they should listen to. And so we're up to about 75 or 80 now.
It's like their introduction.
Yeah, my question for the thieves is, when you tell another person to listen to this show, what show do you recommend? Is there one you think represents what we do well? Is there an episode I should tell people? Well, listen to this one, and if you like it, you'll like it.
Yeah.
And, you know, send us that email at, what's it called?
StealThisBeerPodcast@gmail.com.
StealThisBeerPodcast@gmail.com.
The one where you had Obama on.
Did we have him on?
Oh, that was Mark Maron.
I drink so much. But anyway, so do me a favor. Write that in. Tell us what episode we should suggest.
Yeah, what's your favorite
episode?
I'd
like to know. Well, not your favorite. What do you think? Shows what we do best.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Which was a good episode.
Okay.
Anyway, read me some thief correspondence. What
so
are they saying?
This is coming from Jake, and he's got a question about
Jake.
Allergies in beer, which is pretty
okay.
good. Something we haven't had before.
No.
Something that is not talked about too often is drinking beer as a person with allergies. I am allergic to peanuts and a couple of tree nuts, including walnuts and pecans. Luckily,
everybody you grew up with just got mad at you.
Yeah. Luckily, I've avoided any allergic reactions from drinking beer by making sure I know what beer is before I drink it if I am unsure. So he's got a couple of questions. The first one is, do you think beer should be required to list ingredients or at the very least allergens? In most cases, when nuts are present in beer, it is mentioned on the label. In the instance of being at a restaurant, though, and having staff not be aware of allergens, is there anything that they can do to prevent mix-ups and life-threatening reactions? That's the first question.
Okay. I don't blame you if you don't want to touch this one. I'm willing to go, but as
is
a courtesy,
there some legal
I usually
issue?
Check if the guest has any feedback on allergens. Yeah, like I said, it's a
we
tough
we try
one.
Not to use them.
I'll jump into this one, and this is one of those annoying Augie Carton answers. So I apologize. We'll get to it, but let's get to
but
that
it's
one.
About your beer.
Okay, but let's handle them in order.
Okay.
We're going to go to Gorp, right?
Yeah, that's the second part.
Because I make a peanut beer. This is going to frustrate you, and I'm sorry about that, Jake, but no, I think it's wrong. I think they shouldn't be labeled. I think there's been a big push by the company that produces EpiPens to convince people that allergies are far worse than they are. You can Google this and you can read about it. You can find out that there's a corruption. If you believe you have a life-threatening allergy to tree nuts, you need to change your doctor, and you need to get better information. Allergies are a real thing. I was an allergy kid. I grew up with strawberry allergies, pepper allergies, chocolate allergies. I had all these allergies, and I worked through them with a doctor through immunization. And I'm not saying you don't have an allergy, and I'm not saying I want you to have an allergic reaction. What I'm telling you is you've used some language in your letter already that tells me you don't know enough about your own allergies, and I think that's your job.
I'll get allergy. Not a doctor, by the way.
Yeah, but allergies are a bad thing. That's what I'm saying. You should talk. You should change your doctor if you're worried about entering places that have allergens in them, and you should get a better doctor. And you should work through these things. And that's the thing.
But he's not just saying entering a place. He's saying consuming.
That's the thing. The allergy, and your degree of reaction to it. First of all, just go look up the amount of people that die of anaphylaxis in a year in America. It's not a real thing. Okay, so let's just stop with the life-threatening allergy. Let's go to it sucks to have an allergic reaction. I don't want to have an allergic reaction. That we can totally agree on. You can need epinephrine. You can need medical treatment to get through a bad reaction. That's a real thing, but it's also different for every human. So since you're the human with allergies, it's your job to know, and it's your job to be overly aware. Now, like you said, you put the perfect problem here. Draft beer in a restaurant and a bad waitress not giving a fuck, the same person who's going to give you regular coffee because they didn't brew any decaf at the end of a dinner is still going to serve you something bad. And that's never going to change no matter how much government gets involved in labeling shit. So you know you have a reaction. You should. The internet's in your pocket everywhere you go right now. Find out what's in your beer, and it's your responsibility to take care of you.
Now, and if a beer has peanuts or something like that, it's probably going to be pretty apparent but you can't assume
it will be. I agree with you,
you know
that
I mean?
It should
like
be like
weird ingredient.
What thing. I'm saying is so Gorp, my beer Gorp, which I'm sure is where this is going, Gorp is a thing that is good old raisins and peanuts from our hiking days, right? If you have a peanut allergy and you don't know Gorp means good old raisins and peanuts, again, I'm putting that on you. But you may not, and therefore before you order a beer called Gorp, you should go to all the different places you can find out what it is and protect yourself. And I guess that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's my job to protect you. I want to help you be protected. I want to help you be comfortable. But this is your thing, and it's your responsibility to know these things and do everything you can to keep yourself safe. Fair enough?
Sure.
Now, what's the rest of the question?
All right.
It wouldn't be bad if you killed a few more beer geeks, though. So.
Stop Ooh. With the hating beer geeks, man. Without beer geeks,
Scott,
the
anything
show
to
is
add to that?
Dead.
No.
I understand. I would avoid that one.
I think everyone should also friend Augie on Facebook so they get more of these great political rants.
Do these rants every day. This is my thing.
Hey, I'm a Gary Johnson fan.
Yeah, feel the Johnson.
What is Aleppo again?
What's Aleppo?
Yeah.
What's Aleppo? You don't know?
Are you kidding me?
You don't know what Aleppo is?
All right, moving on. He's got a second part. Augie, I know Carton makes Gorp, and I must thank you for always updating your tap list in case I have to avoid the brewery when that is available.
Now he believes he can't come to the brewery. I told you that was going to happen. You need a different doctor, Jake. Your doctor is bad. You can walk in the brewery with peanuts in one draft line. You're not going to have a reaction.
You're a full-grown
man, Jake. Yeah, you're not going to have a reaction. If you believe you're going to have a reaction, you have bad medical advice.
All right, that's not the end of it. Since you're really into flavors, I'm curious to know if it is possible to make a beer taste like peanuts without actually using peanuts. I'm also curious to know if allergies have ever come up in conversation at Carton during the brewing process. Thanks for making a great podcast. Sincerely, Jake.
Thanks, Jake.
You might have lost a listener. But
well, no, I think Jake will get it. I hope. I don't think you listen to this show if you're not a little tough.
So can you make a beer taste like peanuts?
Yes, of course you can. It's in this. So I recently took my kids on that trip to North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And for it, we went over Michael Pollan's children's reader version of Omnivore's Dilemma. And it reminded me of the flavor manufacturing part, which is all about New Jersey. Like, if you drive to Carton Brewing from the Parkway, you pass IFF, the International Flavors and Fragrances,
yeah,
which gets so much heat in that book. Like, it's a thing, and it's truly amazing what you can do. If you truly, and I bet you had some of this in your science part of schooling, but when you get to the volatilized aromatics that can be organized to make something taste more like strawberry than a strawberry, mm-hmm, you're doing things like powdering roach shells and adding that to something else. And so you can make anything taste like anything, And there are brewers out there trying to make beers taste just like other things and using additives to do it.
Mm-hmm. So IPAs that we hate, right?
But I'm sure that can be done. It's not the brewing I want to do. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost sure if you're getting a carton beer and it's got an allergen list, you know, if it's a strawberry or something or whatever, I'm only going to be doing it with the real thing because, to me, that's the magic. Like, when we're talking about grapefruit, the magic is in what I can do. You know, what I could do in my kitchen, what I can do in my kettle. And that's me. But yes, you could. I am 100% sure if I went to IFF and wrote them a $10,000 check and said, I want this beer to taste like peanuts without any allergens in it, they would have maybe 4 seconds of work to do to hand me something I could put in a beer and make it taste like peanuts.
Safe to say.
Yeah. So there. That's that.
And have allergies ever come up in conversation at Carton during the brewing process?
I mean, we know when we're using an allergen, but keep in mind that celiac's a real thing. Like, fundamentally, beer is an allergen for part of the world.
Right.
So I don't know how much conversation you're going to focus on a different allergen in your beer.
You know what I mean? Like, gluten-free beer, right?
We fool around with gluten-free beers, but they never really leave the tap room because I like to keep gluten out of my diet largely because of the amount of beer I drink.
Same.
So I play with gluten-free, but so far none of the technologies have given me something that's perfect. I've made some cool beers, but it's not a thing I want to sell to people yet. Yeah. But yeah, like I said, so that's the answer to that, Jake. You're making an allergen. Beer is an allergen for anybody with celiac. So how far down that path should we go? You know what I mean? Anyway, I hope that makes sense. Please write us back.
Get a different doctor, Jake.
That's right, Jake. You need a better allergist. There are good allergists out there, and you need a better one.
And if he wants to find one, he can email you personally.
No, unless he lives in my town, and my allergist retired about 20 years ago. But
you just wing it now? Or?
I would just Yelp it, right? Isn't that how you find out what's good everywhere in the world? Your doctor.
Check Untappd and see what.
Check out Untappd. They're going. All right, y'all. Well, thank you for playing along. They should reach out on our social medias, which are all Steal This Beer.
Except for the email, Steal This Beer Podcast.
StealThisBeerPodcast@gmail.com. But you can just go to our website and fill out the form there. And Scott, thanks for having us. I can't wait to go drink soured beers with you all day.
Happy to be here.
Thanks for sitting in. Justin, thanks for doing you.
Yep.
Hey, Brian Cass on the ones and twos, idrinkgoodbeer.com. Thanks for playing along, bro. Get at us, guys.